Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. It's not quite the Super Bowl, but the International Frederic Chopin Piano Competition is still a big deal. And when an American won that competition in 1970, it made international headlines. Garrick Olson was that American pianist, and Chopin has remained an important part of his repertoire ever since. This year, the music world is celebrating the bicentennial of Frederic Chopin's birth, and Olson is taking part in the festivities by doing a series of concerts at Lincoln Center. But first, he stopped by our soundcheck studio to play some Chopin for us. Here is Garrick Olson with the Chopin Mazurka in C-sharp minor, Opus 50, number 3, live on soundcheck.
Thank you.
Music by Chopin, the Mazurka in C sharp minor, opus 50, number 3, played at our piano by Garrick Olson. Garrick, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thank you, nice to be back.
So, lots of Chopin being heard around town and around the world this year, his bicentennial year. There's a huge array of things. Your series at Lincoln Center, this marathon thing at the World Financial Center, and that's just in New York.
I mean, yes, exactly, and it's probably very similar in most capital cities.
Yeah, now, it's not the Super Bowl, but it raises for me a kind of a weirdly similar set of questions to what we were talking about before. On the one hand, you know, why go back to the tried and true? And on the other hand, when the whole world is focusing its attention, what else are you going to give them but the tried and the true?
That's a very good question. I mean, this has been a question as long as there has been a business of art, as well as the art of art, and there's the business of art, is how to promote it, how to disseminate it, how to make it support itself. These are ancient questions. You know, we could even see it in Avatar, the whole, you know, the scientific research versus corporate profit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same problem. I think that these anniversaries focus people's attentions on certain composers, and certainly Chopin is one of the three or four most beloved composers of all, so it's not surprising that his 200th birthday would focus a lot of attention. And to be a little crass, if I may, one thing I have known ever since I won the Chopin Prize in 1970, and I've heard it from all recording companies and performing institutions, is that Chopin sells. In other words, you put up the name Chopin and people want to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the great thing about Chopin...
Why Chopin and not Bach, Beethoven, Brahms?
Well, they don't do too badly, actually.
Right, right.
I mean, let's not talk about Schoenberg and Buxtehude, who definitely don't sell,
mm-hmm.
but are great anyway. You know, the saleability of an artist or the fame of an artist is often an indication of how great they are, but not always, as we know. Chopin has a number of qualities that make him beloved by people who know very little about classical music, and yet he is considered an artist at the very highest level by the people at the highest level, and always has been thus. His fans included people who swooned when he played, and also people like Schumann and Mendelssohn and Berlioz and Liszt and Heinrich Heine, who were no small-brained folks,
mm-hmm.
who felt that he was a sublime artist. I mean, he's one of the great tune writers of all time. He wrote the most unrelentingly beautiful, gorgeous music. It's music that's easy to digest, at least at first hearing, not necessarily to get all of its depth, needless to say, but it goes in very easily.
What about, is this bicentennial also perhaps a chance to rehabilitate this image of the tubercular parlor pianist, you know, writing these painfully delicate little piece. I mean, isn't there some athleticism, some virtuosity involved in a
yes,
lot of...
Yes, there always has been. I like your characterization. I mean, I tend to have a canned one I use in interviews, which say, you know, the neurasthenic tubercular genius who dipped his pen in perfume to write nocturnes for lovesick contessas.
I like
yes,
that, too.
that Chopin has been held up as a salon genius since the 19th century. I mean, he didn't write masses and symphonies and operas and string quartets and all those things that a big grown-up composer is supposed to do, but we now take that as a sign of his genius. In the 19th century, he was much criticized for it, not by people like Brahms, but by other lesser people. And but there is something in Chopin's music to what you said and what I said. I mean, Chopin, without a little bit of that feeling, wouldn't be Chopin, too. He was your classic tubercular neurasthenic genius. He was caviar for the general. He, although the general public loved him anyway. He was thought to be a sick room talent. And as a matter of fact, his harmonies were so weird. They were considered, you know, the harmonic manifestation of his physical morbidness, and his deathly physicality. I mean, I think that's a lot of nonsense, because if we want to draw one-to-one conclusions between who composers are and what they write, we really have a tough time.
Mm-hmm.
Chopin is the poet of the piano, or one of the great poets of the piano, but he's an epic poet also. And there's not only athleticism; there's tremendous athleticism in Chopin's music. Is Mr. Tomasini wrote last week in the New York Times, a pianist who can play the 24 etudes reasonably well can play anything written for the piano before or since, because it is the athletic encyclopedia, which is part of what he left us, part of what he gave us. But he is a great poet of of great strength and range. And I must say, I grew up, of course, in an era when Chopin was way past the sick room image. And I grew up hearing pianists like Rubinstein and Horowitz play Chopin, and they did not exactly tone it down. They were not whispering in Carnegie Hall and having people say, you know, could you play louder, please? They played full-scale music. And I also am pragmatic enough as an artist, and no teacher has ever taught me to do this. Teachers had to, you know, hose me down because I'm about 2.5 times as big as Chopin ever was and much stronger when I play these loud modern pianos. But nevertheless, you know, when Chopin writes a fortissimo, the climax of a piece, or a triple forte, I don't think he really means to say, oh, well, I mean that intensity, but you must play it very softly anyway. I think that's that's taking the artisticness a little bit too far.
So you let it all hang out there. When he wants a fortissimo, you're pounding away.
I do, and there is a story that one of his favorite pupils was a strong German boy named Ludwig Gutmann who broke a string playing the military polonaise and apologized in confusion, and very sick Chopin is rumored to have said, young man, if I had your strength, there wouldn't be a string left to the piano when I finished. So, you know, I don't really know.
Okay.
He loved when Liszt played his own music, for example, and Liszt was definitely buff and went to the gym and had lots of muscles.
A showman, a little something for the ladies.
Lots for the ladies, Franz Liszt.
Garrick Olson is my guest. He's performing at Lincoln Center, the first two concerts in his Chopin project, celebrating the bicentennial, tomorrow night, 8 o'clock at Alice Tully Hall, and then next month, Sunday, March 21st at 2 p.m., and then there'll be two more in the fall. But Garrick is here with us now, and you want to play some preludes for us?
Sure.
Maybe, I don't know, one or two?
Let's have, well, maybe I'll try three. I'll try three rather not, well, I'll try three. I won't try. I'll play 10, 11, and 12. C-sharp minor, B major, G-sharp minor. So you'll get a little bit of everything.
Garrick Olson live on Soundcheck. Garrick Olson, and three of the preludes, 10, 11, and 12, and I've already forgotten the keys.
C-sharp minor, B major, G-sharp minor.
Garrick Olson live at Our Piano, performing Chopin tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock at Alice Tully Hall, and March 21st, a Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock, and More to come in the fall in this bicentennial year. We've been talking about Chopin. What about you? How did you get to be the Chopin guy? Was it simply a function of winning the Chopin piano competition?
Partially. I think that all talented young pianists have to deal with Chopin. It's just one of, like with Mozart, Bach, and Beethoven, it's just one of the things you do. He, as I said, he is kind of a Rosetta Stone of how to play the piano. So all pianists, even if they're not Chopin pianists, know Chopin. And all my early heroes were great Chopin players, but I just really developed a great fascination with him during my teenage years, his music, really. And then the Chopin competition was handily located in time because I was trying to push my international career, my career which was barely international at the time, and I needed – this has to do with Super Bowl, actually. We were talking about the tried and the true.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons you need to win a competition is not just to – it's not like an athletic event to show that you can run or swim faster. It's just that why would Lincoln Center or the Chicago Symphony or the Des Moines Symphony hire somebody that nobody's ever heard of? The audience is going to say, oh, they've got this person on their series. Well, we never heard of him. Oh, but there's Gary Colsner. There's Emmanuel Ax. We've heard of them. Mm-hmm. I'll buy tickets to them. People tend to go for what they know. So, I mean, this is once again, I'm being a bit crass, but that is the commerciality of art. So we need to win these things not only to distinguish ourselves and show how splendid we are in front of our colleagues, but to get the attention of the world. As I like to say, the day before I won the Chopin Prize, I was a promising young American pianist with about two dates for the following season. Oh, the day after, I was the winner of the Chopin Prize, and my manager had probably 80 bookings.
Wow. We've talked on this show a lot about how the music industry has changed over the years. Not for the better. It's in turmoil in the pop music side. Could you do that in the classical music world today? Does that still happen?
Not to the same degree. It still has – these competitions still have a great impact. I think there's so many of them now, and they're also media savvy that it's hard for me to know who won Rio or Sydney or Hong Kong last time, and therefore it's very hard for the general public to know. There are so many. There were plenty back when I was a kid, but not the inundation. Plus, if you win one, your window of opportunity for striking it, you know, striking while the iron is hot is much shorter.
Mm.
So it's actually much tougher for young artists now.
Well, also just, you won that competition in Warsaw, Poland, at the height of the Cold War, behind the Iron Curtain, American pianist going to Warsaw, winning the Chopin competition. I mean, just from even an extra musical point of view, that
yes,
was
it had
big
a,
news.
It had a certain very fabulous historical impact. And I'd like to add to that fact that for two of the three rounds, we didn't even have an American judge because Leon Fleischer was supposed to be the judge and he was ill.
So was it for you? I mean, you were young, you know, early 20s,
I was
right?
22, yeah.
Were you ready for this?
Yes and no. I had a very good idea of what might happen if I won. But you learn by doing in terms of career, publicity, getting yourself ready for engagements. It's a huge learning process. It was very exhausting because I thought once I won the Chopin Prize, I had climbed Mount Everest and everybody knew me. I didn't realize then, speaking of the commerciality of art, that I would then have to go make my debut everywhere in the world for the next 5 years and sort of show them all again. Because I thought, well, surely. I mean, I was a bit naive because, you know, when people won big competitions before, I knew who they were and I'd buy a ticket to them, but I didn't realize that not everybody – I followed piano competitions the way some people follow the football game. So
you knew who all the winners were, you know, which tickets you were going to buy
exactly,
and all that
exactly.
kind of stuff.
Exactly, but yeah.
Well, now people know Garrick Olson. They know when to buy those tickets. Tomorrow evening at Lincoln Center's Alice Tully Hall and Sunday, March 21st at 2 p.m., two more Chopin concerts coming in the fall at Lincoln Center as part of the celebration of the bicentennial. And Garrick Olson, it's always a pleasure to have you with us on Soundcheck.
Pleasure to be here, John. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. And that'll do it for this edition of Soundcheck. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we'll hear about colleges that are training the next generation of composers of video game music. Also, jazz saxophonist Miguel Zinon will play live in our studio. Soundcheck's technical director is Irene Trudell. The program is produced by Brian Wise and Joel Meyer. Our executive producer is Gisele Regatau, and we had help today from Rachel Kowal and Chase Kulpan. Join us again at this time tomorrow for another Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer.